part of it here this morning. We'll do the rest of it, Lord willing, in the second service. So First Timothy chapter 5. But let's go ahead and read the section here, beginning with verse 3. Honor widows that are widows indeed. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth, and these things give in charge that they may be blameless. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have received the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows refuse. For when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. If any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So chapter 5 opens with how Timothy, especially, and how pastors in general, are to relate to various members of the congregation. In other words, Paul spoke to Timothy about entreating older men. He spoke to Timothy about younger men. He spoke to Timothy about older women and younger women and how that he is to relate to all of the various ones that are in the congregation. And it's very similar to the instructions that Paul gave to Titus as well, along that same line of those different classes of members and how that he was to relate to them. You remember that Timothy and Titus were young, and so they were both under 40. At the time these letters were written to them, Timothy was acting as a pastor here in Ephesus for some time, and Titus was on the island of Crete. But nevertheless, he was instructing them, and you remember he told both of them essentially not to be despised for their youth, but to be examples to the believers and to be examples to those, especially those younger ones that were more their age. So they were to take special heed how that they conducted themselves. And the mention in verse number 2 of the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. And immediately after he speaks of Timothy relating to the different women that are in the congregation, he began to talk about in this next section, which is about widows in the church. And that's verses 3 to 16 that we read to start out. So this section has some parts to it that are kind of difficult. They present some different problems. Interpretations of this passage have just varied historically. There's been a lot of different ideas that have come up about this passage. Probably one of the common ones is that Paul here is establishing some sort of a ministry or program for the relief of widows within the church, and some see that as leading to an order of widows. Some of them would, you know, even go further to see some sort of something akin to nuns and that sort of thing in a church. Now, I really don't believe that interpretation is right. And the reason why, I want to give you a few reasons why I don't believe that's the correct way to look at this passage. And one of the reasons why I want to do that is because when we get off on the right foot and we approach it properly from the start with, a lot of those difficulties go away. It's just not as hard to interpret when we start out on the right foot contextually. So why is that not the right interpretation, that this passage is not Paul setting up some sort of order of widows and system of support of widows within the church or some sort of office of widows or what have you? Well, Because first of all, first reason, Paul's argument, when you look through this section, Paul's argument is not that widows should be supported. Now, if you follow that closely, you'll notice that Paul, he never argues for that. In other words, that's a given. That there's widows in this congregation and there's widows in need of support is obvious, and it's presupposed that the church is going to be involved in supporting and helping them. So Paul doesn't argue with Timothy that this is what ought to be done. He doesn't do that at all. So he's not correcting them for failing to support widows. He's not saying they need to set up a particular system, but rather he is specifying which widows ought to be supported. So when you read through this passage, realize Paul's not saying that they ought to do this. He's saying which ones they ought to do. In other words, they're already doing it, and it's presupposed that they should be doing it, and obviously there was a problem with the way they were doing it, and so he is correcting that. Second reason, when you look at this text, Paul is addressing a particular situation. And that becomes very plain, especially by the time you get to verse 9 down to 16. You can see there that Paul is addressing something specifically. So there's something going on there. We're not told all the details about it, but Paul is addressing some particular situation going on in the church at Ephesus, and obviously there were some problems. Now we know, and this is obviously one of the benefits, a lot of times we think of certain passages that are hard passages. And you know, there's a verse or two, or maybe a section of verses, and oh, that's a hard passage. A lot of people see this and that about it. But when you study a whole book from start to finish, a lot of times those passages are much clearer than when you just look at a couple verses. So, Brother John has been going with the church through this letter verse by verse, and so one of the things that I've heard him say several times and point out is, why did Paul write this letter to Timothy? Well, Paul wrote this letter to Timothy because Timothy needed to correct and to address some problems within the church at Ephesus. He wrote this letter to Timothy so that Timothy would know how he himself should behave in the congregation, in the assembly, and how he should instruct those in the congregation that they should behave themselves in the congregation. We know that he has addressed a number of different problems, like some false teachers that were teaching in Ephesus or having some influence in Ephesus. We know that he had addressed problems with some elders, that obviously there was a problem there. We know that there was a problem with greed and some of these other things. So obviously, Paul is writing this letter to address problems in that church. And when you look at this section, you can see by what Paul says and what he's emphasizing in this section that there's at least two problems in this church that he is speaking directly to in this section. First problem, families were not caring for their own and they were putting an unnecessary burden on the congregation. So you see this coming out in verse 4, in verse 8, and in verse 16. Three times in this passage, Paul talks about how that those that have those widows in their family, whether they be children or grandchildren or what have you, that are in need and have need of support, that they ought to be supporting them and not burdening the church with that. So obviously there was a problem with those in the church at Ephesus that were not doing this. Rather, they were just leaving it to the congregation to supply out of the congregation's resources rather than the families. So that's the first problem we can see that Paul is addressing specifically. And then there's the second problem. And the second problem is he makes several references to the younger widows. And when you look at this section, you can see that the younger widows, there was some sinful behavior among the younger widows in the church at Ephesus that he was addressing as well. So either those younger widows were being supported by the church at Ephesus, or perhaps it was being suggested that they should be supported by the church at Ephesus. Maybe they were seeking that. Verse 7, he says very plainly that they are to be charged because of their manner of life, that they would be living blamelessly. And in verse number 15, he references specifically that some, he's saying some there in the church at Ephesus, some are already turned aside after Satan. That there were some younger widows that had essentially departed from the faith and had turned aside to follow after Satan. So Paul is addressing these two specific problems in the church at Ephesus. The third reason why we say that Paul's not trying to establish some sort of order of widows or what have you. One of the reasons why that is thought is because of verse 9. Let not a widow be taken into the number. And that word that's used for number there can mean a role or a list. Like for someone to be enrolled, it can be sort of a formal thing. It could be an informal thing. But this does not refer to, it doesn't have to refer to an established order or office for widows, but it could simply mean, which I believe it does as you study the context, it can simply mean just the number of those that are being supported by the church. It doesn't mean that they were, you know, installed in an office or something. And then the fourth reason is that of the good works that are mentioned in verse number 10. So often those that take verse 9 to mean that Paul is referring to the establishment of an order of widows, almost like I said, almost like a form of nuns, they say verse 10 is the works that they are supposed to be engaged in as servants of the congregation, and then they're under the pay of the congregation. But and we'll look at this verse more closely when we get to it. But the works that are spoken of in verse number 10 is not prospective works that they're going to do. It's things that they have well-established reputations for already having done. And Paul's talking about the consideration of who should be taken into that number. So when they are considering those that they should support, this list of works is given as a testimony or an evidence of the godliness that he is looking for. So it's the consideration of who they're going to support and not what job they're going to be given under the employment of the church. You could also see that this list of things is also what the younger widows lacked and what they were exhorted to. Okay, so I just wanted to get that out of the way. That's probably one of the most common interpretations of this passage. What do we have in this passage? So as we look at this section, what we have primarily is Paul correcting an abuse of the church resources and a reproach on the church's witness. So you had those families within the church that were not caring for their own and were burdening the church with that. So they were abusing the resources of the church in that manner. And then you also had some who either were enrolled or were trying to be enrolled, and they were living in a manner that was ungodly, and therefore they were bringing a reproach upon the church. So Paul is addressing primarily those two problems in this section as he writes to Timothy. So let's begin looking at this. Verse number 3. Honor widows that are widows indeed. Now I know that sounds like a command. It sounds like that Paul's instructing him to do something. And in a sense, he is. But the word for honor that is used here, it is a word that means more than just to be kind to or to show respect to. It's actually a word that means material support. It's a word that means literally to fix a price on something. To honor something, in other words, is to set a value on something and to treat it in a way that correlates to its value. So just as if you had, let's say, maybe your father or your grandfather or your grandmother or something maybe gave you something when you was a kid and it had some sentimental value to it, but you didn't really think a whole lot about it. And then somewhere down the road, you come to find out that this was actually a highly sought-after collector's item and actually had a great monetary value. Well, would that change the way that you treated this treasure? You're probably going to be a little more careful with it when you begin to realize that it has a greater value than what you originally assigned to it. So that's something of the thought that comes across in this word, that you're fixing the price, you're fixing the value of something, and you are treating something according to that value. So obviously underlying that, when he's saying, honor widows that are widows indeed, he is saying to value and to esteem them very highly. But again, it goes further than just showing a respect. It does also speak of a material support. And if you turn back to Matthew chapter 15, this is the way that Jesus interpreted this term. And when he interpreted the command in the law that we are to honor father and mother, Matthew chapter 15, he is here correcting the Pharisees. And in verse number 4, he said, "For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curseth father or mother, let him die the death." Now, typically, we say that to children, and we teach them that you are to obey your parents. And that is absolutely true. You are to obey your parents. But the responsibility to honor your father and mother doesn't cease when you become an adult or when you cease to be a child. That honor goes on beyond that. Notice what he goes on to say. "But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or mother, it is a gift by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, and honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free. Thus have you made the commandment of God of none effect by your tradition." So this was a tradition of the elders. It was a teaching of the law. So what is going on there? What Jesus is saying, the Pharisees had a practice that said, rather than giving a material support to their aged parents, that they could designate something as dedicated to God. Now, of course, if you follow the train of thinking, you know, I've got this bit of money here, and I could give it to my aged parents, but I say, you know what? Actually, no, this is dedicated to God. And since I am dedicated to God's service, I put it back in this pocket over here, and I use it for my needs, and therefore it's used in the service of God. That's what the Pharisees were doing, in essence. And what they taught through their tradition was that the responsibility to honor the father and mother was fulfilled. You were righteous in not giving that material support that was needed because you dedicated it to God. That's what Jesus is talking about. So the point of this is, this same term, honor, that is spoken of, this is the way Jesus interprets it. Honor thy father and mother means a lot of things, but it does also mean giving to them materially and supporting them physically. And that may not always necessarily mean money in terms of dollars, but it's going to mean a material and a physical support and a help to them. So when Paul says, honor widows that are widows indeed, he is presupposing that the church has the responsibility to support widows that are in need in the congregation. So if you take that word honor and you just think of it in terms of support, you could read the verse this way: support the widows who are truly or really widows. That's what this verse is saying. Support the widows who are truly widows. Now we'll get to what that truly widows means in a moment. But I do want to take some time to quickly go over this ground. Because again, Paul is presupposing that the church has the responsibility. So if you look at what he's saying, he says, support the widows that are truly widows. In other words, he's not trying to persuade them that they have a responsibility to support widows. He's trying to teach them what ones they're responsible to support. They're responsible to support the ones that are truly widows. See, that's the point of what Paul's saying. The fact that they have a responsibility to support the widows is already presupposed. So, where does this come from? Well, it comes from a number of places. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 22. Exodus chapter 22 in the law. Now, oftentimes, widows can be used in connection with either foreigners, strangers, or aliens, and can also be used sometimes with orphans or the fatherless. And sometimes widows and orphans or widows and the fatherless are used sort of as a shorthand way of just speaking of those that are impoverished and those that are weak and vulnerable and easily oppressed. And sometimes it literally is referring to widows, as we see in the passage in 1 Timothy. But in Exodus chapter 22, verse 22 states, "You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If thou afflict them in any wise, and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless." So built into the law was the understanding that they were not to take advantage of widows and fatherless, or strangers in their midst, it comes in other places as well. So the law taught them that they were to protect, and they were to care for, and they were to support those widows and fatherless that were in their midst. And there was three particular ways that this was to be done. In Deuteronomy chapter number 14, three particular ways that the law taught that they were to support the widows and the fatherless that were in their midst. Now, these are the three ways that are required. They also certainly were free to give help in any other way that they saw fit as well. But these were the things required by the law. First of all, was through a tithe. And through a second tithe. A tithe in addition to that first 10%, it's a second 10% tithe that was to be given in the third and the sixth years of every 7-year cycle. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, in verse number 28, "At the end of 3 years thou shalt bring forth all the tithe of thine increase the same year, and shalt lay it up within thy gates. And the Levite, because he hath no part nor inheritance with thee, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, which are within thy gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hand which thou doest." So there was an additional tithe that was required. You know, you had that 7-year cycle, the 3rd year, the 6th year, they were to bring an additional tithe, and that tithe went entirely to the Levites, to the poor among them, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, those that were needy among them. You can read also about that in Deuteronomy chapter 26. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 4. So the tithe was one way that they were to support them. The second way, Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse number 19. "When thou cuttest down thine harvest in thy field, and hast forgot a sheaf in the field, thou shalt not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thine hands. When thou beatest thine olive tree, thou shalt not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. When thou gatherest grapes of thy vineyard, thou shalt not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, and thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt, therefore I command thee to do this thing." There are also other passages that refer to this as well in the law. This was sometimes referred to as the law of gleanings. So according to the law, a man was not to reap his entire field. He wasn't to reap the corners of the field. He wasn't to reap the ditches, the irrigation ditches of the field. He wasn't to go over it twice. He was to reap his field, to take in his primary harvest, but then those that were poor among them, the widows, the fatherless, and the strangers that was among them, could then come into the field behind them, and they could glean. And they could glean enough for themselves to eat, and also some extra that they would sell and then have some money. Obviously, one of the most well-known and famous instances of that was Ruth gleaning in the field of Boaz. And even Boaz showing her even special favor when he instructed his reapers to let fall some of the handfuls on purpose that she would glean even more. So that's according to the law that this was done. The third way, in Deuteronomy chapter number 16, the third way according to the law, was that there was to be a provision made for the widows and the fatherless and the strangers. There was a provision made at the feasts, this particularly the pilgrim feasts. In Deuteronomy chapter number 16, and verse number 11, "And thou shalt rejoice before the Lord thy God, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant, and the Levite that is within thy gates, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are among you in the place which the Lord thy God hath chosen to place his name there. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and thou shalt observe and do these statutes. Thou shalt observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days, after that thou hast gathered in thy corn and thy wine. And thou shalt rejoice in thy feast, thou and thy son and thy daughter and thy manservant and thy maidservant and the Levite, the stranger and the fatherless and the widow that are within thy gates." And he goes on talking about that and after the next feast and what have you. So they had pilgrim feasts 3 times a year when they would go up to Jerusalem, and there they would feast. And everyone was to partake and everyone was to rejoice. And those that did not have to contribute, the widows, the fatherless, the strangers that were among them, were also to come up, and they were to make provision that everyone partook, that everyone rejoiced before the Lord during these feasts. So, in the law, you had these three primary ways that was a means of ongoing support for those that were impoverished and destitute in various ways, widows being one of those. The fatherless are also usually mentioned with them. When you consider the writing of the prophets, and let's just take one sample, Isaiah chapter number 1. This law of their support to the widows and the fatherless and so on, their doing of it or their failure to do it was also a way by which their righteousness was judged before God. So one of the things, when you go through the prophets and you read certain condemnations that are pronounced on Israel and upon Judah, one of it is because of their ill treatment of the widows and the fatherless that were in their midst. Isaiah chapter 1, verse 16, "Wash you, make you clean, put away the evil of your doings from before mine eyes, cease to do evil." Notice what he says, "Learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow." In other words, he says, do well, walk in my ways, walk in the ways of righteousness that involves the support of those that are impoverished, and so on. So we also find this principle continuing on when we come to the New Testament as well. One of the well-known places is Acts chapter number 6. Acts chapter number 6, this is when the church was in Jerusalem. This is after Pentecost. There were thousands that had been added to the church at this time. It says in verse 1, "And in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews, because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration." Now, you'll find nowhere that the church in Jerusalem was specifically taught to have a daily ministration of food to widows in their midst. Nowhere. Where did they learn that? Well, obviously, they learned that from the teaching of the law. They learned that from those principles. It was something, actually, as you go throughout the book of Acts, and even later into some of the epistles, that they continued to emphasize that you are not to forget the poor. When they were talking about the Jew and Gentile divide and many of those questions, it was emphasized again and again that you're not to forget the poor. And he means the fatherless and the widows and the foreigners, whatever, that are in your midst. So the church at Jerusalem here, because of the need that they had a daily ministration of food. They were feeding widows every day. And we all know that there, and then, of course, it speaks about the problem that came up because of that And so they didn't cease to feed the widows, but they actually appointed others over it so that it could be taken care of and seen properly. In other words, there was no question about whether or not they should be doing it. The Peter and the apostles didn't step back and say, well, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, and I know as a dad, I know one of my first responses is, well, if there's a problem, then nobody gets it, okay? If people are unhappy with what they're getting, then that's fine. I'll get it all and nobody gets it. You know, that's the way I want to solve a lot of problems. But Peter and the apostles didn't do that. They could have said, well, we'll just stop the day. We'll nip this in the bud. We'll just stop this daily ministration if there's a complaint between the Grecians and the Hebrews. But that wasn't what they did. Rather, they said, you know what? It's too much. We can't keep up with it. We must be giving ourselves to prayer and the ministry of the Word. So the church is going to have to look out 7 men that are of good report and all of these things so that they can be appointed over this business to make sure that it's taken care of properly. Why? Because they believed it had to be done. That it was their responsibility to do. And it is. We see this also in James chapter number 1. James writes in verse 27, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world. And the word that's used for visit there doesn't mean just to go, you know, drive by and sit on the front porch and chat for a while. It actually means to relieve. In other words, to support, help to support. It speaks of material support. So, the food ministration that we saw in the book of Acts, and we'll go back to 1 Timothy now. The food ministration that we saw in the book of Acts was a form of ongoing support. In other words, when it comes to the relief of the poor, There were two primary ways that was done. One was an ongoing support, and the other was an emergency type assistance. So, like in Acts chapter number 11, you had the famine in Judea, and you had sort of an emergency assistance that was raised to give aid to those that had been affected by that. And so, you have emergency assistance, which is one thing, and then you have an ongoing support of the destitute among you. That's what Paul is talking about here in 1 Timothy chapter 5. The ongoing support of those that are destitute, those widows in particular. So when Paul restricts this to true widows, widows indeed, he shows that it is an ongoing support and not just an emergency type relief. Now, I've got to finish up this verse. Widows that are widows indeed. And that word indeed just has the idea of truly or really. They're truly widows, Paul is saying. The word for widow that's translated widows comes from a Greek word that means chasm. A chasm, a canyon, you know, a big whatever else you want to call it. The word that is used here, that it comes from that root that means chasm, but the word that's used here means bereaved or left alone. The word that's used for widow. Now, Paul's going to go on to define what a true widow is in verse number 5. But the word itself means to be bereaved or left alone. What I'm saying is that the word that's used here doesn't indicate death in any way. Now, in English, when we speak of a widow, we're talking about a woman whose husband has died. But the point is that this is a woman that is left alone. So does it include a woman whose husband has died? Yes, it does. But it also would include other situations, maybe like a divorce or an abandonment where a woman was just left and left in destitution. I'm just saying it's a broader word than what our English word widow is. And it seems that Paul goes to great lengths to describe exactly what he is talking about. So again, death is included in the word, but that's not all that it means. So Paul, when he says widows that are widows indeed, he doesn't mean only a woman whose husband has died, but a woman that is left alone. And oftentimes, the term widow also carries with it some other baggage. The term widow puts us in mind of older age. The term widow oftentimes puts us in mind of poverty. The term widow puts us in mind of a lack of family. And that's not, I know that's not necessarily true in all cases of a woman that's a widow, but that's just sort of the stereotypical image that we get along with that word. And I think that that's borne out here as well as you work through the rest of the chapter. All right, so I believe that we will stop here, and Lord willing, we'll be able to make the rest of this. This really was a long setup and introduction, so hopefully we'll be able to get through the rest of it. Let's have a word of prayer, and then we'll dismiss for the Sunday school. Almighty Father in heaven, Lord, we do thank you for this beautiful day that you have given to us. Father, we thank you for your word. What a precious treasure that it is to us. How I just pray, Lord, that you would give us hearing ears and seeing eyes, that you would open our hearts and minds, that we would receive your word, that we would understand it, that we hide it away in our hearts, that we not sin against you, that we walk in your ways, that we love one another and provoke one another to good works with it. Father, I do pray that you would be with the Sunday school classes, be with the teachers that are going to teach, and just pray that you would give them the proper words to say, and give us hearing ears to receive, and be with the service and the preaching later. All things said and done today, Father, we just pray that they would honor and glorify your name. It's in the holy name of Jesus Christ I pray. Amen.